This is Solidarity Journal. Share in a common voice. Just might find your own.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. It's Tuesday, August 30th, and you're listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica affiliate and progressive radio station. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. Today we have a pretty good show ahead of us. I was up in Madison, actually, this past week, covering the Solidarity March and Rally. And I also got to sit down and talk with Eric Cobb, the executive director of the Building Trades Council of South Central Wisconsin. And we kind of talked about what's going on in Madison right now and what has happened with the labor movement and what has happened after the recalls. And I also got to speak with some of the protesters and those who got arrested for not leaving the center of the rotunda. So we'll have more on that later on in the show. Also, guest reporter Larry Jones has an interview with Carl Rosen, who is with the Families Against Toxic Waste in Peoria. And he'll be talking to her about some of the more recent things that are going on with their actions. And finally, we had David Cobb. You may know him from 2004, running under the Green Party against Kerry and Bush. He now does organizing with a group called Move to Amend, and he's touring the country, telling people why corporations should not have personhood, should not have constitutional rights as you and I do, and what that does to our political system and way in life in general. So he was at the Forest Park Nature Center. We'll have some audio from that, and I also got to sit down with him to do a one-on-one discussion, and I was joined with Bill Poorman and Elaine Hopkins, who writes for the Peoria Story. Also, today's show was edited at Wart Radio, 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. So stay tuned to the Solidarity Journal and prepare to be radicalized. WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate and progressive radio station. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. So this past week, I had a chance to sit down with David Cobb, who ran under the 2004 Green Party ticket against Kerry and Bush, who is now organizing for a group called Move to Amend. He came through Peoria for the tour, and we had a chance to have a discussion with him.
So we're here this morning sitting with David Cobb. He ran in 2004 on the Green Party ticket against Kerry and Bush, and is now touring through the country, getting more people aware about the corporate sector and how it plays a very influential part in our politics and our daily lives. So we'd like to thank David for sitting down with us. Now, could you tell us a little bit about Move to Amend?
Well, first, thank you, Michael, and I'm very appreciative to be here with the local community radio station and Peoria Progressive and the Peoria Story, which I think, before we even get into it, really deserves to be said that the only reason that we're having this conversation is because it's non-corporately filtered news, information, and analysis. So anybody listening to my words now really needs to recognize and come to understand the degree to which the corporatist and militarist have hijacked the media institutions of this country. So just kudos to the groups who are here. And I am here in Peoria as part of a five-week tour on behalf of a coalition called Move to Amend. It's online at movetoamend.org. We are a coalition of several hundred organizations and growing, over 130,000 people and growing, who are calling for a constitutional amendment to make it clear that corporations do not have constitutional rights. Broader, we're part of a democracy movement in the United States. It is difficult for some, but ever more people are coming to realize that the United States of America is not now, nor has it ever been. In fact, it wasn't really designed to be a functioning democratic republic. A small ruling elite have been in charge of this country from the beginning. There have been great valiant efforts to make it a more democratic country, the abolitionists, women's rights of Seneca Falls, the trade union movement, the civil rights movement, and it has never been complete. So in a nutshell, Move to Amend is calling to make the promise of a democratic republic a reality in the United States of America, and we intend to win.
What makes you think you can defeat corporate power and really do anything with this movement? They're going to come after you if you pose a threat with all the money they have in the world, and they have it.
Absolutely. What makes me think that we're going to win is the fact that every other great social movement that made systemic change in this country faced the same basic problem, which is to say the abolitionists, who everybody today cheers and acknowledges and respects, in the 1840s were a small group of people who were challenging in not only entrenched power, but the entire cultural, political, economic reality of the country. It was any rational thinking person would have realized that the abolitionists had no chance of winning against the culture that was arrayed against them. And yet, of course, not only did they win, but they changed the reality. Likewise, those women who gathered at Seneca Falls in New York to demand that they be treated as fully vested legal persons under the law, there was no way that anybody thought that they could actually win. And yet they changed reality. The same is true of the trade union movement. The same is true of the civil rights movement. What makes me think that we can win? In a nutshell, the words of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who said, "The arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." And I believe that we are in that same tradition.
How are you going to do it?
Well, the strategy is actually quite simple. The strategy is to start at the local level, identify those people who are all in as well, and begin the process of challenging not just corporate power writ large, but the legal doctrine that allows corporations to claim constitutional rights. What's so exciting about this is it unites progressives, principled conservatives, independents, and moderates. Nobody that I've met that when you explain to them the concept of corporate personhood or corporate constitutional rights actually thinks that that is a good idea. So we've got a bedrock legal doctrine that we can attack at the local level. We intend to get local organizations to endorse the Move to Amend effort. We want to help form local affiliates here in Peoria. I can tell you already there are organizers who are organizing a Move to Amend affiliate that includes labor activists, environmentalists, peace and justice, and racial justice activists coming together under that banner. So then local organizations pass the resolution and help to collect signatures that feed in not only to the local effort but the national effort. Then we begin a resolution for the city of Peoria where you put it on the ballot and voters get to vote. Do you think that corporations should have constitutional rights? Yes or no? Do you think we should amend the Constitution to revoke this legal doctrine of corporate personhood? Yes or no? We know every time we've gotten that on the ballot that it wins hands down, and it gives us the opportunity to engage in political discussion with literally thousands, tens of thousands of people at a time by using the electoral process. Ultimately, we will be making demands of elected officials to say, "Elected official, you can't say you represent me if you're not on board with this idea of revoking this legal doctrine." And ultimately, those elected officials who will not get on board with us, regardless of what party they're with, they will be replaced. Our movement is going to grow so large and powerful that there are so many voices that make up the chorus that they will have to, the elite will have to accommodate us. We don't start by accommodating what they say we're allowed to do.
What is corporate personhood for those who aren't as far along in these issues? What is corporate personhood, and why is it bad?
Well, Bill, thanks for that question. The concept of corporate personhood is a shorthand way of describing the legal doctrine that says corporations should be considered persons with the same constitutional protections and rights that actual human beings have. Remember this, that the Constitution does not create rights. The Constitution recognizes existing rights, sometimes described as natural rights. Those natural rights belong to human beings by virtue of simply being born. And if government, through the democratic process, actually infringes upon actual human rights, government is wrong, not the individual. And I would argue, for example, that women's rights are human rights. I would argue that ethnic rights are human rights. And that it is inappropriate, it is illegitimate for government to infringe upon those rights. And if that happens, we should be able to go into court and overturn such a law. Jim Crow segregation laws should have been overturned in court. Laws preventing women from voting should have been overturned in court. So I want to be clear, I'm a civil libertarian. I absolutely believe in the concept of human beings have sacrosanct constitutional rights. But the court, in an act of supreme judicial activism, actually shoved down our throats the idea that a corporation is also a person with constitutional rights. Even though the word corporation is never used a single time in the Constitution, the Supreme Court, and not just the Republicans on the Supreme Court, because for the last 25 years, Democrat and Republican judges have consistently held, yes, corporations have constitutional rights, and it allows corporate lawyers to go into court and overturn democratically enacted laws that attempt to control corporate harm, abuse, and oppression. For example, not only campaign finance laws have been overturned, but environmental protection laws have been overturned on the basis of corporate personhood. Worker protection laws have been overturned on the basis of corporate personhood. Consumer safety laws have been overturned on the basis of corporate personhood. It is a linchpin legal doctrine that has allowed the ruling elite not only to hijack this country, but to use the legal system to legalize the oppression that they visit upon us on a day-to-day basis. And that is the reason that there is such broad and deep support for opposing this principle. No matter what political party one is in, no matter what your ideology is, there is a core understanding and recognition that a small ruling elite are using illegitimately our legal system and our Constitution against us, we the people. And it's time to rise up in a nonviolent manner and actually take our country and our culture back.
So for the people here in Peoria, what can they do to get involved? Why should they start mobilizing? What should they start considering that these corporations do to actually not hold their interests, that they may seem friendly, like with charities and so on and so forth and sponsoring things, but in the end of the day, they're about themselves? Why should they mobilize against that, and how can they?
Well, the why is a pretty easy one, because we are facing a looming ecological crisis. The global climate crisis is already happening, and it's getting worse daily. The inherent inequities of our economic system are becoming more obvious every single day as ordinary people are seeing the credit crisis pinch them. People are losing their jobs, they're losing their retirements, they're losing their pensions, they're losing their homes in the foreclosure crisis and an eviction crisis sweeping the country, where a small ruling elite are gaining ever more power and wealth. Let's remember that there is not actually, it's incorrect to say that there is a budget crisis in this country. There's a budget allocation crisis, because there's plenty of money. We're in a huge economic boom, but a small group of people are actually getting it all. That's the problem. So I would say, if people think that everything is actually okay and they think the system is actually working, then probably they should just keep on doing what they're doing. But if like me, they think that there is a profound problem in the social, political, and economic institutions of this country, then I invite them to go to the website, movetoamend.org. if it makes sense to you, and it makes sense to almost everybody who I talk to, then sign up. Sign that petition, because we're not just going to humbly present that petition to elected officials. That's an organizing petition. I'm asking them to join the movement. And then I'm asking them to use their Facebook page, their Twitter page, their own email accounts, and forward that out as widely as possible, so we start using the phenomenon of social networking to go around the corporate media in order to grow this movement even further. The third thing that I can tell them is, if they're in Peoria, as they sign up, when the Move to Amend affiliate is formed, which is forming right now, literally as we speak, we will be sharing this information with the Peoria organizers. And we'll let the local folks in Peoria Move to Amend decide exactly what the immediate next steps are. If folks are turned on by this, I would urge you, go to the website, movetoamend.org, share with us your commitment to this movement. We will share your commitment with other folks, and then we will start to cross-pollinate one another, and hopefully I'd like to come back to Peoria.
You're listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate and progressive radio station. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. Before we go into our next segment, dealing with what was going on up in Madison, Wisconsin last week, I'd like to just make a quick announcement. Art Show is having a month-long event that will include lots of art and live musical performances every Friday and Saturday. If you don't know what Art Show is, it was created by Gavin Lynn, and it's located at 331 Fulton Street, Suite 100. Basically across from the Civic Center on Jefferson Street. You could also listen to our show at radioforall.net and check out the 19th week. And we have actually an interview with Gavril Lind about Art Show. And so she will be presenting the works of Christopher Robin Keller, who is a self-taught artist currently living in central Illinois. He'll be showing his works from all stages of his development at Art Show. Also, each weekend, there will be a raffle with all the proceeds being donated to TAPS Animal Shelter. And refreshments will be provided on the 2nd, the 16th, and the 30th of September by Broken Tree Coffee. We also had an interview with Jeremiah for Broken Tree Coffee on the 16th show of Solidarity Journal. So if you want to learn more about that as well, just check us out at radioforall.net. And if you want to learn more of the listings of the bands that are playing at Art Show, just contact Gavrilin at gavrilynn@gmail.com. Or Christopher Keller, who's the one who's also organizing and presenting his art, at tfwosperewell80@gmail.com. Or you could just go to Facebook and type in Art Show and see the events. The opening will be September 1st. The actual musical performances start at 9 on September 2nd. Tina Sparkle, Theodora, Sky Mall, and Dripping Slits will be performing that night. And then September 3rd, musical performances will start at 8 p.m. And these acts will include Love, Lust, Tennessee Jim, Die Like a Champion, the Four Leaf Rovers, and the Oscillators. So yes, just check those out. And a lot of great things happening in the art world in the Peoria area. Looking forward to that. So right now we'll go to our next segment that I did while up in Madison, Wisconsin this past week with a Solidarity and Rally March that went from Library Mall up to the Capitol Building. It was some good stuff, so here's more on that. I was standing down at the Library Mall in Madison, Wisconsin, walking amongst people who I've come to recognize since the beginning of the fight against Governor Scott Walker, since February. This was in response to Wisconsin State employees receiving their first paycheck that showed a 13% pay cut, and that's courtesy of Scott Walker. The Economic Policy Institute estimates that these wage reductions, implemented by Act 10, will cost the state nearly $1 billion in economic activity. So now the people of Madison were coming back out before session would start again in September for a rally called Day of Impact. Eric Cobb, executive director of the Building Trades Union in South Central Wisconsin, took to the mic and spoke of the attacks that Walker was doing against the workers of Wisconsin.
Now, the reason that we're here is a very serious reason. We're calling this day, the 25th, a day of impact. And the reason that we're calling it that is because we have so many public sector brothers and sisters that have been impacted by Governor Walker's cuts. And I can take a good hard look at the Facebook post that we've had for this particular event today and see a very, very long list of people talking about how much has been taken out of their pockets today. We have people that are unrepresented people that work for this state, unrepresented by unions. Their first check is entirely wiped out for this month. Do you call that shared sacrifice? Can any people in this audience get on board with taking money away from poor people and giving it to the rich?
No!
So again, I've talked to so many working people over the last several months about what's going to happen on this day. And they were too afraid to talk about it. I'd say, let's calculate how much is going to be taken out of your check. And they say, no, I don't want to talk about it. That's that first effect of denial that you have when you know that something bad's getting ready to happen.
Then Sam Jordan, with the Labor Committee Network and People's Rights Campaign, gave a pretty fiery speech on the austerity measures taken by Governor Walker to help out the corporate sector while destroying the working people of Wisconsin. And then she went on to kind of talk about what was needed to improve the state.
People's Rights Campaign first kicked off. We kicked off because Walker was promising us a budget of draconian cuts, of austerity measures that would deeply harm and damage the livelihoods of everyday people in the state of Wisconsin. And we knew that it didn't need to be so. We were told that the state was broke, but we know that that's a bunch of crap. Corporate taxes have not been raised in this state since the 1980s. The fact of the matter is that the wealthiest 1% of Wisconsinites actually pay less in state income tax than the bottom 50 put together. And we just come together today to say that that's bollocks and it's enough. The People's Rights Campaign believes in these core principles. The right to collectively bargain and organize into a union. The taxation system in which corporations and the wealthy pay their fair share. Living wage jobs for all people and fair compensation for those who can't find work.
Yeah.
Quality, affordable public education. Quality, affordable health care for everyone.
Yeah.
Affordable and decent housing. And strengthen human, civil, and immigrant rights.
So after the array of speakers were done, we all marched up to the Capitol steps and walked through the front doors of the Capitol building. I'll be honest, nostalgia hit me from all ends, and it took me 5 months back, when the occupation was still alive and well. And then someone took to the center of the rotunda, what was once the People's Mic area, and made a quick speech for those who died fighting before us for workers' rights.
We're all here for a reason. We're defending rights people died for. People might not remember this, but in Wisconsin, people gave their lives years and years ago. I want us to take a moment of silence to remember those 19 people. They were fired on by the state militia in a protest similar to this. The state militia fired on them, mortally wounding 19 people and killing 19 people. We filled this rotunda with the chants we know and love and brought back that majesty. But now if we can all stand here in a moment of silence and remember what we are here defending, and remember what people died for. So people, please, for me, for the people that died, for all of us, for the rights we're defending, for the people that took a huge pay cut today, let's stand in a moment of silence. Thank you.
The silence remained for a while, And then after some more chanting, a single voice broke out above us on the first floor. Then again, Sam Jordan took to the center and presented a question to the crowd, whether to stay or leave the Capitol building. As you could tell, Chief Tubbs wasn't too happy about that.
All right, everyone! So, folks, we have a decision that we all need to make, and I'm going to leave it up to the crowd to make this decision democratically. Unlike our governor, I'm not going to make that decision on your behalf. The Capitol Police would like us to leave. And I'm gonna leave it up to you all as to whether or not you want to do that right now. Do you want to leave now or not? Do you want to stay?
Move house!
Right now, I'm sorry. Really, it's not an option. We're gonna have to close the building, guys. You gotta cooperate with us. You gotta cooperate.
Then a teacher who had occupied the building from day one took to the microphone.
I'm Ava Proctor. I'm an SEA at Jefferson Middle School. I was here the day that we stormed the doors, and I was here talking to the amazing young people that sat here day after day and refused to leave. And what I told them then, I'm going to tell you now. They cannot take away your dignity. They cannot take away what you've accomplished. When you leave on your own terms. I would like to see, so we are graciously keeping our good faith community, to go out on our terms. Let's chant Recall Walker. We've got a lot of work to do, and we got to keep everyone on our side and positive. So I personally think it's time to find another
then day. Then Damien Terrell, an activist, disagreed. And then Damien let out his frustration about the police after having cooperated with them in the beginning of the occupation.
I was here last week, and I was thinking, what's different? Why does it hurt me so to be in my building? I miss the smell, I miss the sound, I miss the people. And this has really brought something back for me, so I appreciate that, and I wanted to articulate that. I want to advise us to stay. I'm a young man, but I learn quick. And I feel like we've given them every opportunity to work in good faith. But I want my faith back. I'm not going to put my faith in a structure that screws me. I'm going to put my faith in the people next to me to stand with me and make real change. I wanted to find the conversation. I want to look to you for inspiration. I refuse to wait for them to tell me when it's time to leave. I've played that card. I've been the bigger man. But now it's time for me to learn my lesson. Between the difference between being nice and being docile, being nonviolent and being used. We have the strength and power to remain nonviolent. I don't advocate for that. We have the strength and power to be thoughtful, to be courageous, and to be pure. But we also have the power to sit as long as we want in our own building. If they don't follow their rules, why the hell should I?
The center of the rotunda sat down and gripped with each of their hands an American flag. They had decided to stay and risk arrest. also hoping that more people in the rotunda would join them. I spoke to Jeremy Ryan, who was sitting in the circle. What's going through your mind right now? Does this kind of planned out beforehand that a group of you or some of you were going to stay in while going through the Capitol?
You know, I've been waiting for this moment for quite a while, to the point that we'd have enough people who are willing to stay in here, even for just this long. But, you know, once we got this far, I think we need to make a statement that Wisconsin's not dead, that the citizens are ready to rise up. And I think that's why even if just this group stays, it still sends the message.
Bill Fetty, the chair of the Autonomous Solidarity Organization, told me why he was going to risk arrest.
Well, first of all, the people in Illinois are in just as much trouble as we are. They may not have dealt with the drastic cuts they're dealing with that we're dealing with now. State employees there will be facing this. The private sector employees will be facing this. The families there will be facing these same problems. We're not just standing up for ourselves. We're not just standing up for Wisconsin. We're fighting this. We've been fighting this battle since February for everyone. This isn't some selfish act. This is a point where we've negotiated with the police. We've done everything the police have asked us. We've done similar actions to this and walked out under our own power before. This time, for me personally, it's come to a point where I've been pushed and pushed and pushed and gave as much as I was willing to give. And at this point, watching families have to honestly say, I'm either going to have health insurance or I'm going to be able to pay for my kids to have food on the table. I'm going to either be able to have the necessities to survive, or I'm going to have to cut all of the benefits that they've already cut. These benefit cuts are nothing new. This is going to go on nationwide. It's already going nationwide.
I asked Tina Murphy, who was with Wisconsin Resist, what she thought of the situation unfolding between the police and protesters.
I think that right now this is a victory, just being here past closing time. I mean, it's already been half an hour. This wasn't planned. It was a democratic action, and people are deciding if they want to stay or leave. But, you know, either way, we've showed our power to the police, and I think that's really excellent.
Chief Tubbs then gave us a final warning to leave.
I am too. Okay, I'm going to ask everyone, this is an opportunity here to leave. Leave on your own free will right now, okay? So I'm asking everybody here to leave now.
We're responding respectfully, no.
Okay, and that's good. It's very clear to me what you're responding. Everyone who wants to leave, leave now.
Once I was outside, I spoke to Erica Wolf, who just a few minutes before was inside talking to each of the activists who were going to risk arrest. She was also there to support them and be there for them on the outside if they needed to be bailed out. What part were you doing as far as collecting names and numbers?
So all those people are my family, you know, from the occupation, so I know them. And a lot of them are younger folks who, you know, this whole uprising here in Wisconsin is the beginning of them acting out as organizers, and not acting out in a childish way, but acting out in a very adult, premeditated way. But there's, you know, people have things to learn, and so I just try to help them out. So I was just trying to make sure that they had thought through what they're doing and thought about what the consequences are and reminded them they need their IDs, things like that.
Do you agree with what they're doing in there? And if so, how do you... Yeah, do you basically disagree with what they're doing in there? Not the police, but the people who are staying.
I don't disagree at all, no. I mean, I'm a registered lobbyist, and I work for a nonprofit organization, so I have to pick and choose my arrests wisely. So unless I've made my demands clearly and premeditated what I'm doing, I don't choose to get arrested. So I have no problem or see anything wrong with what they're doing. It's just something that, you know, I tend to choose to support those folks who do get arrested, rather than be the one that gets arrested. But certainly, you know, in solidarity with them in this action, I'm just on the outside making sure they got a friend who's, you know, they all just wrote my phone number on their arm, you know, so they trust me.
Later on, Jenna Pope, a human rights activist and advocate, was one of those activists who was carried out of the Capitol by police and arrested for unauthorized assembly, which pretty much amounts to a misdemeanor. I spoke to her outside the Capitol building after she was released from the police's custody.
It definitely wasn't planned. I mean, we obviously had planned to march through the Capitol, Some of us had kind of discussed beforehand possibly staying a little bit longer, you know, just pushing their buttons a little bit, you know, allowing some people to speak, getting some chance in to remind people of what it was like back in February and March. But we all decided we were just going to play it by ear. You know, there was no set plans like, okay, we're going to stay and these are the people that are going to stay and this is how we're going to handle it. We just kind of went with our feelings. So that's what I was feeling at the time. I felt like I needed to stand up, you know, and not leave, not give in.
Why is it important that they understand what's going on, understand what it was that you were doing there today, why they should not find that as a selfish act?
You know, people say, like, oh, you're doing it to get attention, you're doing it for this or that or this or that, but, like, if I was doing it to get attention, I wouldn't be getting tickets. I mean, I could be, now I have, I don't even know, like, $700, $800 worth of tickets that I could be getting. I don't have the money for it, so if I was doing it to get attention, I would have gone about it in a different way. And honestly, I'm doing it for everybody. I mean, there's people that want to, you know, stand up for the rights and refuse to leave the Capitol or interrupt an assembly or a Senate hearing or do other various acts to show that they are displeased. But a lot of these people have families. They have full-time jobs. A lot of them can't be getting arrested. They can't be getting tickets. They don't have enough time to spend here to do that. But I am in a certain point in my life where I don't have anybody else to worry about but myself. You know, so if I'm getting tickets, hell, I mean, if it means I'm not going to get a certain job in the future, that's fine with me. But I do it for everybody else who can't. I mean, also for myself. I mean, I am a Wisconsin resident. I'm going to be affected by these changes, as well as many, many other people in Wisconsin, and that's the people I'm doing it for, everybody.
Eric Cobb, who had organized the Day of Impact rally and march, sat outside with me, not too far from the Capitol building, and talked about what was happening to Madison after the recall efforts had failed.
I can't remember how many millions of dollars were pumped into these recalls. I want to say it was around $40 million from all around the country was flooded into the state of Wisconsin for these recall efforts, and that's everybody throwing money at the state. We had the most expensive state senatorial race in the history of the United States right here in this country, or in this state, and it was the Alberta Darling case, that's what it should be, the Alberta Darling race in the Milwaukee area, and we had a fairly strong Democrat running against an extremely strong Republican who had held that seat for over 20 years. It was a tough race no matter what, but it was the most expensive Senate race in the country's history in a midterm election, or not even a midterm election, a recall election. It's obscene, and it really goes to show you the tremendous difference that we've had with Citizens United. Now you've got anybody that can dump millions of dollars into any race, but as a corporation. Now, it was obviously geared towards corporations, but now you have unions, big unions, dumping millions of dollars into that same process, basically giving in and saying, although we know that this law is wrong, we're going to use it to our advantage now. And it's like, whoa, hold on a second. You can't do that. And now you have conversations about Super PAC. Have you heard this? So now what they want to do is they want to have all the major unions come together. You know what a PAC is, right? It's a political action campaign, or it's a We Are Wisconsin that used to be a coalition network is now a PAC. So you have all the big unions in the state dumping money into this PAC so that PAC can go make commercials.
And We Are Wisconsin is now a PAC?
We Are Wisconsin is now a PAC.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And that was what We Are Wisconsin's PAC by itself, $14 million into the recall effort, just by itself. So that's literally millions of dollars coming in from national organizations, coming in from international unions, all dumping into this PAC, because that PAC could then do whatever they want with that money, which would be, and I'm not kidding you, because I'm hauling around equipment to shoot these commercials for, you know, these anti whoever ads, whatever ad that was in there. It was, We Are Wisconsin even suggested at one point during the prior to the recall elections that they should run fake Republicans, just like the Republicans were running fake Democrats, in order to stretch out those primaries so they had more time. So, I mean, if that's the kind of behavior you're going to have in politics, you're perverting the entire system. The entire system's completely perverted. The whole system is completely supposed to be about your vote and her vote and my vote and anybody else's vote counting and making a difference. But that it totally gets thrown away when you have PACs and super PACs that spend literally millions upon millions of dollars on crappy commercials that are supposed to sway you one way or the other that don't even hit the issues. That was part of the problem with the recalls. Oh, absolutely. The main problem that real union labor leaders in this town had issue with the recalls, was that in the recalls, we didn't have a single one of those people talking about union, working class, or anything that had to do with work.
Like they didn't even mention collective bargaining.
Collective bargaining wasn't even mentioned one single time. So none of that. None of them ran on, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get in there and I'm going to try and turn over Act 10. Or I'm going to try and repeal all these laws that were brought on to you. Or we're going to try and get you back your collective bargaining rights. None of that stuff was mentioned. Yet you have unions dumping millions of dollars into a super PAC like We Are Wisconsin to spend on these commercials and spend on these recall efforts to get volunteers out to these areas and all this other stuff, with none of your own self-interest as part of the message. I'm totally blown away by that.
Did they ever explain why they were doing that? Why they weren't doing what we were doing back in February and March?
It was the dinosauric machine. The dinosauric machine says, this is how we've always done it, so this is how we're going to continue to do it. They had every ounce of fear that they possibly could against doing anything different. They haven't gotten to the point to where they look at something and they say, you know what? What do we have to lose? Let's go ahead and try something different. And that something different is, rather than spending $40 million on recall efforts to maybe win, and you notice that they didn't, they only got two out of the three that they wanted to get when they really wanted six, and they barely saved the last two from last week. They won by like 12%. They won by healthy percentage points, but they also dumped millions of dollars into it.
Now, what if that candidate who says he is for all these pro-labor,
pro-working class,
ends up falling in the line of what the Democrats have done for the past few decades? Like, what can be done then to counter that?
Well, everything about politics is more than just about endorsing somebody. So part of the downfall of the recall effort is that, number one, we weren't running strong candidates. We didn't have strong candidates to really pick from. Number two, we're really talking about, what are you running on? What is your platform? There wasn't really a platform there. It was, we're not the other guy. Okay. The next thing is accountability. I need some accountability. I need to know that if I'm going to take my hard-earned vote to that booth and vote for you, that you're going to do what is in my best interest in representing me. That's the simplest form of what the political structure should be. Now, I can call Mark Pocan right now. He's actually my representative. I live in his district, neatly enough. I have his cell phone number. I can call him and talk to him about just about anything at just about any time. If I bump into him on the street, he stands there, he shakes my hand, he talks to me about whatever I want to talk about, he listens to me, and sometimes you hear him implement the things that we talk about. That's what he's supposed to do. That's what all of them are supposed to do. But what do? They get wrangled up in the machine, and they get pulled off by special interest, and some people would say unions are special interest, and they say, do this for me, do this for me, do this for me. And they go in that direction and do that for them. That's not what we're here for. You're here to represent the better interest of the greater whole, not the special interest, not the small group.
And with that, we'll take a break. But when we return, we'll have Larry Jones interviewing Carl Rosen with Families Against Toxic Waste. So stay tuned to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. Are our unions here to stay? These multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
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 It's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapons, solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, all that list goes on and on. With every year that passes, countless thousands more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
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 It's a war on the workers, and it's time we started calling the shots. Your pay?
It's a war on the workers.
Patty knows what to say.
It's a war on the workers.
They talk privatization.
It's a war on the workers.
And cooperation.
It's a war on the workers.
They talk flexibility.
It's a war on the workers.
Every working stiff can see.
It's a war on the workers.
And they call you a team.
It's a war on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
Thanks for tuning in to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate and progressive radio station. I'm your host, Michael Perola. Now we'll go to Larry Jones, who interviewed Carl Rosen with Families Against Toxic Waste. Here's Larry with more on that.
Peoria County and the city of Peoria are jointly considering a major landfill expansion. A significant number of citizens and environmental groups, including HOI Sierra Club, the Global Warming Solutions Group, and Peoria Families Against Toxic Waste, have expressed concerns about the way the project is developing. I met with Cara Rawson of Peoria Families Against Toxic Waste to talk about the proposed landfill expansion. We met in Cara's home, and as you'll hear, her two basset hounds also have strong opinions about the landfill.
So what we're working on right now is the city-county landfill, which is, it needs to expand. It, you know, we're a big area. We grow pretty consistently, you know, Peoria and the surrounding counties. So how that started is that the city and county of Peoria said, we need to expand the landfill. So they put out a call for bids, and mainly it was PDC and Waste Management that went up against each other. And PDC won the bid. So what we're working on now is, I would say there's probably three main issues with the landfill. One is the size. When the city county put out the call for bids, they asked for a 10 million ton landfill. And 10 million tons is way more than we need. We've, in the process of going through hearings and committee meetings, we found out that the 10 million ton number, frankly, is arbitrary. When they were going through the process of setting up the request for proposals, they said, okay, well, cell one, the first cell of the landfill, landfills are called cells, you know, so there's the original space of this landfill is a 3 million ton landfill. The second space, there's a second cell already in operation, and that one will probably not be full until 2020. The second cell is a 5 million ton landfill, so for whatever reason they said, oh, 10 million tons sounds good. Let's ask for a 10 million ton landfill without doing any kind of study as to the needs of the county. And the service area is going to be a four county area, half of Marshall, Stark, and Mason counties, and as well as Peoria.
So it's not just Peoria County that would be putting its waste into this landfill?
No. Half of Marshall, because I think the other half of Marshall, there's another landfill. And then Stark, Mason, and then Peoria. So Peoria's we're going to be the primary user. But a 10 million ton capacity, and one of the things about that is that there's a lot of recycling happening.
I was just going to ask, how would recycling a major expansion of recycling impact the proposed landfill?
It has a tremendous effect. They just started a program last year to in the city of PDC. They've got new toters in the city, and that's a growing program. New people sign up all the time. And you've got lots of efforts. I like to use as an example the new company opening up in downtown Peoria, a shingle recycling company. So you're looking at all of the, construction shingle waste, which is probably considerable, from the Peoria area, going to this company now to make new asphalt roads. And the recycling movement is really just gaining steam. There's so many different ways to recycle so many different things. And around the county and hopefully out in the other three counties, these things are expanding. So when you have recycling, you have a lot less garbage going into the landfill. I offer myself up as a perfect example of this all the time. When we first moved into our current home, I would put out 2, sometimes 3 garbage cans a week. Now, these are street garbage cans, not the kitchen 13-gallon. These are like the big ones with wheels that you roll down to the street. And then I started recycling in earnest, my plastics and my glass and my paper. And I went from putting out 2 to 3 cans a week at the curb to 1 sometimes. I literally cut my own waste output from this house by 75%, which was huge. And now we compost as well. So we generate a minimal amount of garbage. So when you think about that, if most households were capable of doing that, a 10 million ton landfill is even that much more ridiculous. The idea that the need would grow. And they also, the numbers are also wrong in the, I don't want to say wrong, we think they're wrong in the proposal, because they say, Peoria is growing by 1% every year. So the landfill needs are going to grow by 1% every year. But that takes absolutely no recycling into account. So that's issue number one. And we're really trying hard to talk to the landfill committee. There is a landfill committee composed of a couple of city council members, some county board members, and then...
Let's go back just a little bit. I mean, this is a kind of an obvious question, but what's wrong with having a big, giant landfill?
Well, you have a number of issues. There's our big issue is health and safety. Where this landfill cell is going right next to where the current landfill is, and this is down towards the airport. You have Cottonwood Road is where it's located. If people don't know, you can Google it or Google Map it. And so you have health and safety issues. One of the big concerns is there are former mines on the site, like unmapped, unmarked mines, just old mines that people dug up and left. So they have actually determined just off of the footprint of the landfill are these old mines. They could be filled with water. They could be completely caved in. Nobody really knows because they're really deep and there's not an entrance anymore. So there's that, a huge landfill. How is that going to affect, if these lands, old mines start to subside, then where does the land go? How is that going to affect the liner? Are you going to have a complete tilting and a spilling, of landfill material and leachate? And that's one of the issues. And then in the proposal that we've read through, trying not to get too technical, we think that to accommodate this 10 million ton request from the city county, the way the design is that they're going to dig down into the bedrock to make it deep enough that they can eventually fill it up 10 million tons. And what kind of risks are you running there? Are they going to blast out the bedrock? If they blast out the bedrock, does that create cracks then that will allow water to seep deeper into our water supply or towards the river or contaminate some other, kind of water source.
Now, this is separate from the hazardous waste site that you were on.
Yes, this is a flat out, this is a municipal landfill. This takes my household waste, your household waste. You know, if you're in one of those counties, this is where your household waste goes. They also take special wastes, and those can be construction wastes in large amounts, or it's mildly hazardous waste, I guess, is a way to look at it, where it's below a certain threshold of contaminants that the government has said, this stuff isn't so bad. We disagree on that a lot of times, but they can also take special waste. Every special waste has to be approved, though, so that goes through a process. So the big issue is the health and safety and frankly, the need. One of the things that we're asking for in this, they've got the contract. They've been given the contract, and that's fine. We're not opposed to this landfill overall. We understand that there is a need, and that's fine. Recycling is not moving that quickly, you know, progressing that quickly, the industry, to say that, oh, we don't even need a landfill. No, we need a landfill. So that's fine. We're just trying to get the most safety protections out of it that we can. One of them that we are asking for is say they have this 10 million ton landfill, and the municipal waste that comes in from Stark and Mason, half of Marshall and Peoria County, ends up ultimately being about 5 million tons. 5 million tons. What are they going to do with the other 5 million tons? There is nothing in the contract right now that says that other 5 million tons, you know, next time around, don't expand. We are going to say that of that 5 million tons, 4 million tons has to be used for municipal waste. Right now, if PDC wanted to, they could bring in 5 million tons of special waste from wherever they wanted to, if they could get a contract for it. So you're looking, and the county does not benefit from that at all. There is no financial benefit whatsoever to, if PDC brings in more special waste and fills up the other 5 million tons with waste from God knows where, you know, with all sorts of contaminants in it, low-level contaminants, the county receives no benefit, and this is a publicly owned landfill. This landfill is owned by the city and the county, and it is run by the city and the county. So if we're going to put out, you know, money and essentially, you know, let them use this land to run a landfill for us, if we're not going to be able to use it, that makes no sense. You know, there's no benefit to the people. So it's sort of, you know, giving away the farm, as it were.
So where is this issue now? What's happening with it?
Where we're at right now is on August 29th and Tuesday, August 30th, and then Wednesday, August 31st, if they need it, there are hearings happening from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Grand Hotel on Brandywine Drive, and this is right across from the Northwoods Mall in Peoria. They're having hearings, public hearings, so anybody can go at any time that they want to. And lots of members of Peoria Families Against Toxic Waste, Sierra Club, Global Warming Group are going to be there to, you know, sort of be present and monitoring the hearings. The public hearings with the city and county officials present. PDC is going to take up most of Monday, probably a good part of Tuesday, presenting, here's the plan, here's what we'll do, presenting the operations, you know, really going through in great detail how this landfill is going to work. The important thing for most people to know about is Wednesday night at 6 p.m., also at the Grand Hotel on Brandywine Drive in Peoria, there is a public comment session. It starts at 6 p.m. It'll go for however long, hopefully not till midnight, you know, but a couple hours, 2-3 hours. And anyone from the public is allowed to come and make a public comment in regards to the city-county landfill expansion.
So there will be people from both the city and the county boards?
Yes. Yeah. Peoria City and County. It's the county board and the city council. Right. So there are representatives from both on the landfill committee, and then other city council and county board members will also be present because they're, you know, the officials in charge of this thing ultimately. So they will be there. PDC will be there during the public comment period. You know, they'll have representatives. They'll probably have their own supporters speaking on, you know, behalf of the landfill. And again, we're not opposed to this landfill in any way, shape, or form. We just want to make sure that these specific issues are dealt with in the siting committee that best protects the health and safety and financial interests of the city and the county, because this is our public landfill.
Last question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to plug those public comment dates again?
Yes. Okay. So the big ones are Monday, August 29th, Tuesday, August 30th. Those are the landfill hearings at the Grand Hotel on Brandywine Drive across from the Northwoods Mall in Peoria. The really important one is Wednesday, August 31st at 6 p.m., also at the Grand Hotel on Brandywine Drive. That's the public comment time. So come prepared. They usually give everybody about 5 minutes to speak. So having prepared comments benefits everybody, because then we'll get out of there before midnight. And then the written comment deadline, which is email or letter, is September 30th. So if you have written, if you want to expand upon whatever public comment you might have made, or you don't have time to come on the 30th, please submit a written comment if you have any concerns about the landfill expansion.
Sounds good. Cara Rawson, thanks very much for doing this.
Thank you very much, Larry. I appreciate you taking the time.
For Solidarity Journal, this is Larry Jones.
So that does it for today's show. I'd like to thank Larry Jones for his interview. Also, Bill Poorman for editing. A really big thanks to WORT, WORT Radio on 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin, for once again letting me use their studio to record some of the show as well, and the people of Madison who've always been generous to me. So tune in next time to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica Radio affiliate and progressive radio station. Until next time, keep up the resistance.